Chapter 10. 5 minutes later, I was in my own car. I had a bag of leftovers on the back seat, and Grandma next to me in the passenger seat as I wound my way through the burg to Steve's funeral home. "Dave wasn't so bad," Grandma said. "He wasn't nearly as bad as some of the losers your mother's dragged home for you. Remember the butcher?" An involuntary shiver ran down my spine at the thought. "And I think it's real nice that Dave knows how to cook," Grandma said. "It could come in handy for some lucky girl." I looked sideways at Grandma. "Well, you could do worse," she said. "I don't see you making much progress marrying what you already got on the string." "I'm not sure I want to get married." "Don't be a ninny," Grandma said. "Of course you want to get married. You want to take out your own garbage for the rest of your life? And what about babies?" "Babies? Sure, don't you want babies?" Truth is, I was pretty happy with a hamster. "Maybe someday," I said. I dropped Grandma off at the funeral home and drove back to my apartment. I spotted Morelli's green SUV parked in my lot, and I pulled up next to him. His truck was empty, and the lights were on in my living room. He'd let himself in. He had a key. I took the elevator, walked the length of the hall, and Morelli and his dog Bob met me at my door. Bob adopted Morelli a while back. Bob's big and shaggy and red, and he eats everything.
"I saw you pull into the lot," he said. "Nice view from up here."
Hard to tell if he was referring to me or the bag of leftovers I was holding. "How did you escape from Uncle Rocco's party this early?"
"I faked a call from dispatch."
He took the bag, set it on the kitchen counter, and reached out to me.
"You're looking really sexy tonight. I almost fell out the window watching you walk across the parking lot."
"Are you sure it wasn't because I was carrying dessert? I could share my pudding with you." He wrapped his arms around me and cuddled me into him.
"Later."
"A drink?" He brushed a kiss across my lips.
"Later."
"So then, what would you like to do?"
"For starters, I'd like to peel this shirt off you, and then I want to see you shimmy out of this little skirt."
"And the heels?" I asked.
"Leave the heels on."
"Oh, boy. That's naughty." Morelli slid his hands inside my sweater. His eyes were dilated black, and his mouth was soft with just a hint of a smile.
"Cupcake, I'm feeling way beyond naughty. We're gonna have to lock Bob out of the bedroom so we don't corrupt his impressionable mind."
5 minutes later, I was down to the heels, and Morelli was wearing even less. Morelli tends to be playful during foreplay. When the foreplay gives way to more serious action, Morelli makes love with a passion not easily forgotten. I was on my back on the bed, and Morelli was finger-walking up the inside of my thigh. I had a grip on the sheet, and I think my eyes might have been rolled back into my head in anticipation of what was ahead.
"Do you like this?" he asked.
"Yes," I said, breathless, every muscle in my body clenched. Morelli kissed me a couple inches below my navel.
"It's about to get better."
Chapter 11. It was Tuesday morning, and Lula was giving me her full attention.
"Okay, let me figure this out," she said. "From the goofy smile you got on your face and the fact you're not walking all that good, I'd say you spent the night with Morelli."
The bail bonds bus was still parked on Hamilton, and Lula and Connie were in residence. Vinny and Mooner were absent. I was on the couch with my hand wrapped around a monster Starbucks. "He's the one," I said. "No doubt about it."
"Yeah, but you didn't give no one else a chance yet. There could be something better. You're already judging the bake-off, and you haven't tasted everyone's cake."
"I don't think I could survive anything better."
"I'm kind of disappointed," Lula said. "I was looking forward to hearing the comparisons."
Not that I would give her comparisons, but I understood wanting to hear them. "How was your date last night?" I asked her.
"It was a big dud. We went to a movie, and he fell sound asleep, and people were yelling at him for snoring. And then the manager came and asked us to leave, and he wouldn't leave without getting his money back, although I don't see where it mattered on account of he was sleeping through the movie, and it wasn't like he cared about seeing the ending. So the manager called the police, and that was when I left. I don't want to get involved with no man's snores like that anyway. It was like sitting next to a freight train. And it was a pity, because I was all set with my boa."
I looked out the bus window and saw that the crime scene tape was still up, and two men in khakis and CSI windbreakers were in the middle of the lot.
"What's going on out there?" I asked Connie.
"I don't know. They've marked off grids and they're poking around. I guess they want to make sure there aren't any more bodies. Or maybe they're collecting evidence. Morelli was here when I came to work, and then he left."
"Did he look happy?" I asked.
"Not especially. He had his work face on. He was with Terry Gilman. They spent a couple minutes talking to the CSI guys, and then they left."
I felt like all the air got squeezed out of my lungs. Terry Gilman was blonde and beautiful, and from time to time I've suspected Morelli of straying in her direction. Terry Gilman also had mob connections, although just exactly how she was currently connected wasn't clear.
"I think Gilman was related to Lou Dugan," Connie said. "Second cousin or something, and I'm pretty sure she worked for him at one time."
Lula had her nose pressed against the window.
"I tell you, if one of those CSI guys turns up another body, I'm going home and I'm not coming back."
"There isn't anything for you to file here anyway," Connie said. "We don't have any file cabinets and we don't have a lot of case files. Business is in the toilet."
"You're still paying me, aren't you? Because I got financial obligations. I got a handbag on layaway that I'm making payments on."
Vinny called and Connie put him on speakerphone.
"I'm at the courthouse and I need someone to come pick up a package," Vinny said.
"What kind of package?"
"A big package. It won't fit in my car. I need Muna to drive the bus here."
"Muna's at an all-day Lord of the Rings movie festival."
"Then get someone else to drive the damn bus."
"Who?" Connie asked him.
"Anyone. How hard can it be if Muna can do it? Just get the bus down here. I haven't got all day to waste standing around in front of the courthouse."
"Hell, I'll drive the bus," Lula said. "I always wanted to drive a bus."
"I always wanted to fly, but that doesn't mean I can do it without wings. Don't you have to take lessons and get a special license to drive a bus?"
Lula was on her feet, moving to the driver's seat.
"To my way of thinking, this here's a recreational vehicle, and you don't need nothing special to drive it."
She got behind the wheel and looked around.
"Let's see what we got. Gas pedal, brake, gear shifter doohickey, and the keys in the ignition. This is going to be a piece of cake."
"Is this bus insured?" I asked Connie. Connie was busy ramming her laptop and a bunch of files into her tote bag.
"I'm moving to the coffee shop next to the hospital. They've got free Wi-Fi. It smells better. It's not always midnight, and it doesn't move."
Lula cranked the engine over.
"Everybody strapped in?"
Connie pushed past me to the door.
"Do not go over 10 miles an hour," she said to Lula. "Do not hit anything. Do not call me if you do hit something."
I grabbed my purse and followed after Connie.
"Hey," Lula said to me, "where are you going? We're supposed to be partners. What about all those times I got your back? And now here I am on a big adventure driving a bus, and how could you be thinking about not sharing this with me? Where's the sharing? This could be a bonding experience."
"I don't think this is a good idea."
"Of course it's a good idea. Just sit your skinny white hiney down. This is going to be fun. I'm going to be a good bus driver. I might even decide to take up bus driving professionally."
Lula put the bus in gear, stepped on the gas, and backed into the state CSI truck.
"Did you hear something funny just then?" she asked.
"Yeah, I heard the sound of you backing into the crime scene van."
"It was just a tap. I'll ease forward a little."
She changed gears and pulled away from the curb.
"This thing don't got a lot of get up."
The CSI guys were staring at us, mouths open, eyes wide. I looked in the side mirror and saw we were towing the van.
"I just gotta give it some juice," Lula said.
She stomped on the gas, and the bus broke loose and jumped forward, leaving the van's bumper in the middle of the road. "Maybe you should pull over," I said.
"No way. I'm getting the hang of it now."
Lula cruised down Hamilton and sideswiped a bunch of parked cars.
"Holy cow," I said. "You just ripped off two more bumpers in a mirror."
"I guess this is wider than I originally thought. No problem. I'll just make a course correction."
She turned right off Hamilton, jumped the curb, and took out a mailbox.
Federal property?" I said.
"People don't use mail no more anyway. It's all electronic. When was the last time you put a stamp on something? Remember when you had to lick them stamps? That was disgusting."
I looked behind us for police.
We sort of left the scene of a lot of crimes.
Yeah, but they weren't big crimes. They didn't hardly count. We could mail in those crimes, except we don't mail anymore. But if we did mail shit, that's the way we'd take care of it.
Lula rolled down Perry Street and spotted Vinny in front of the courthouse.
What the heck is that next to Vinny? I thought he said he had a package. That's no package. That's a big hairy guy on a leash. Probably I'm seeing things, but I swear, he looks like a bear.
It looked like a bear to me, too. It was big and brown, and it was wearing a red collar with a bow tie on it.
Vinny led the bear to the bus and opened the door.
Excuse me, Lula said, but that looks like a bear.
It's Bruce, the dancing bear, Vinny said. I bonded out his owner, and this was all the guy could come up with to secure the bond.
And what are you expecting to do with that bear? Because you better not be wanting to take that bear on my bus. I don't allow no bears on my bus.
First of all, it's not your bus.
It is when I'm driving it. Who do you see sitting in the driver's seat?
I see an unemployed file clerk, Vinny said. Get your ass out of that seat. I'm driving the bus.
You fire me and Connie will be all over you and be my guest driving the bus. I was tired of driving the bus anyways. It don't steer right.
Lula and I squeezed out the door past the bear, and Vinny and the bear got into the bus. Lula peeked back into the bus.
I need a ride.
Someone growled. I think it was Vinny.
Get in, Vinny said to Lula, but don't crowd the bear.
Vinny looked out at me.
What about you? Do you need a ride?
Nope, I'm good.
I wasn't comfortable sharing a bus with a bear, bow tie or not. I watched the door close, and I waved to Lula as the bus drove off. Chapter 12. I stood there, stranded in front of the courthouse, and considered my options. I could call my dad. I could call Morelli. I could call a cab. I had my phone in my hand when a black Porsche 911 Turbo eased to a stop beside me. The tinted window slid down, and Ranger looked at me from behind dark glasses.
Babe.
Babe was an entire conversation for Ranger. Depending on the voice inflection, it could mean many things. At this moment in time, I took it to mean, nice surprise running into you like this. I slipped onto the passenger seat, and Ranger leaned over and kissed me just below my ear. It was a hello kiss, nothing serious. If I wanted it to get serious, all I had to do was smile. When I first met Ranger, he had been working as a bounty hunter, and his address was a vacant lot. He had his hair pulled back in a ponytail, and his dress varied between army camis and black t-shirts and cargo pants. He's a successful businessman now as part owner of an exclusive security firm. The ponytail and the army camis have been retired, and Ranger has moved into a small but luxurious apartment on the top floor of the Rangeman office building. Usually he's dressed in the Rangeman uniform of black t-shirt, cargo pants, and Rangeman windbreaker, but his closet also contains perfectly tailored black suits and dress shirts. He was in uniform today. Are you here fighting crime? I asked.
I needed to get a police report on a burglary. And you?
Vinny had court business, and then he couldn't fit the dancing bear in his car, so Lula and I picked him up in Mooner's bus. The expression didn't change on Ranger's face. Possibly there was a minuscule upward twitch at the corner of his mouth, indicating amusement.
And you didn't want to take the return trip on the bus?
It was a really big bear. Do you have time to drive me back to my car? I asked him.
Yes, but it'll cost you.
I raised my eyebrows a half inch. Are we talking about sex? Ranger lowered his shades and looked at me.
I don't have to bargain for that, babe.
Well then?
I'd like you to look over the security system on a new account. I know how to design a system for maximum safety, but you're better at recognizing elements women find uncomfortable.
Sure, I'd be happy to check it out.
I'm tied up for the rest of the day. Maybe tomorrow after 4.
Mooner's bus was parked in its usual spot on Hamilton Avenue. A squad car, the medical examiner's truck, Morelli's SUV, plus the CSI van, minus its bumper, were all parked in front of the bus. Ranger pulled the Porsche in behind the bus and left it at idle.
This lot is getting more traffic than the landfill.
Do you have any theories on Lou Dugan?
He was an interesting guy, active in community affairs. had his finger in a number of unsavory businesses, had a wife who turned herself into a zombie, and his son is in his final year of residency at Johns Hopkins.
You did some investigating.
There isn't a building here, but I still provide security services. I wasn't able to turn up anything to indicate a connection between Dugan and anyone associated with the bonds office. That isn't to say there's no connection between the killer and the bonds office.
I looked at the bus, which was rocking back and forth. Probably the bear was dancing. Do you want to see the dancing bear? I asked Ranger.
Tempting, but I'll pass.
I got out of the car, waved Ranger away, crossed over the crime scene tape, and joined Morelli. He was standing a few feet from a small red flag stuck into the ground. The ME, the CSI guys, and Morelli were watching two men move dirt with picks and shovels. Peeking out of the pit was a patch of what might be gray suit material smudged with dirt and stuff I didn't want to think about. This doesn't look good, I said to Morelli.
There's another body down there, obviously buried after the fire because the building would have been over the gravesite.
Any idea who it is?
Terry told me that Bobby Lucarelli, Dugan's lawyer, disappeared at about the same time as Dugan. He'd be on my short list.
I made an effort not to use my crazy, jealous voice. Terry?
Terry Gilman. Lou Dugan was her uncle, and she worked for him a couple years ago, mostly doing bookkeeping.
I bet.
Yeah, it's hard to tell what Terry works at. Not that I care right now. She's cooperating with the investigation.
I bet. Morelli grinned down at me.
Are you jealous?
I don't trust her.
How about me? Do you trust me?
I ran the question through my mind.
Well?
Morelli asked. I'm thinking. Morelli blew out a sigh.
Watch what you're doing with that shovel, the ME yelled to one of the diggers. I don't want this guy going in the bag in a million pieces.
A wave of nausea slid through my stomach. I'm out of here, I said. Will I see you tonight?
Yeah, but it'll be late.
He gave me a quick kiss.
Don't wait dinner.
Chapter 13 Lula's car was gone, and so was Connie's. Probably they were at the coffee shop. The bus had stopped rocking, so I figured either the bear had eaten Vinny, or else they were napping. Either way, I didn't want to get involved. I drove the short distance to the coffee shop and parked behind Lula's Firebird. The coffee shop was across from the hospital and was classic Starbucks design, except it wasn't a Starbucks. Two leather couches and a coffee table had been positioned in one front window, and a bunch of small bistro tables and chairs filled the other window area and ran down the side of the shop. Two women in scrubs were at the counter ordering lattes. A curly-haired guy was at one of the tables surfing the net on his laptop. And Lula and Connie had commandeered the couches. How was the ride back with the bear? I asked Lula.
As far as bears go, he's pretty polite, Lula said. He didn't growl at me or nothing, but I don't want to be around when he gotta go potty.
I have some new information on Merlin Brown, Connie said. I ran him through the system and turned up a brother-in-law, Lionel Cracker, lives in the same housing complex as Merlin and works at a deli on Upper Stark. It's about a block down from No Man's Land, next to Green's Mortuary.
I know where that is, Lula said. I used to go to that deli all the time when I was a hoe and I was in the neighborhood. They got the best chili dogs ever made. I could eat those chili dogs till I throw up. If we go check this guy out now, I could have a dog for lunch.
I made a pass through Brown's parking lot and looked for his car. When I couldn't find the car, I called his home phone. No answer.
I bet he's out for lunch, Lula said. I bet he's eating with his brother-in-law.
For the most part, if you park your car on Stark Street and you don't keep your eye on it, at least some of it, if not all of it, will be gone when you return. If I had a black Cadillac Escalade, Mercedes SLS AMG, or a Porsche 911 Turbo, no one would touch my car for fear I was high up on the gangsta food chain, and in that case, stealing my car was a death sentence. Since I was driving a POS Seen Better Days Ford Escort, I made sure I parked directly in front of the deli.
I'm getting a chili dog, a kraut dog, and a barbecue dog, Lula said. And I might get some curly cheese fries to round it out so I get some extra vegetable and dairy. I decided I'm improving my diet by getting a balance of shit in my meals. I bet I've just about got all the food groups in the meal I'm planning. Cracker might not be friendly to us if he knows we shot the toe off his brother-in-law, so we need to be cool.
Sure, I can be cool. What do you want?
I want a hot dog. Any kind is fine. The deli was small, takeout service only. Two gangly kids in homeboy clothes stood at the counter waiting on their order. Two men in food-stained, sweaty t-shirts worked in the kitchen. Both cooks looked like they weighed in the vicinity of 300 pounds. Hot dogs boiled on the stove and grease ran down the walls from the fryer. I hung in the doorway watching my car, and Lula stepped up to the counter.
I want a chili dog, a kraut dog, a barbecue dog, and curly fries with extra cheese. And my friend wants a chili dog. And which one of you guys is Lionel Cracker?
One of the men scooped four dogs out of the water and looked at Lula.
Who wants to know? I want to know, Lula said. Who the heck do you think? Do I know you? It's that I know your brother-in-law, Merlin. He said you work here.
Cracker laid out four hot dog rolls on his workstation and dropped the dogs into them.
What else did he say? That's it. I used to be friends with Merlin, and I haven't seen him in a while, and I was wondering how he's doing. He owes you money, right? What are you, collection agency? Human services? We just came in for a hot dog, and I was wondering about Merlin.
Cracker laid down a smear of yellow mustard on all the dogs.
I can tell you're lying. I know body language, and you're a big fat liar. To begin with, I'm about the best liar you ever saw. If I'm lying, you're not gonna know. And on top of that, did you call me fat? Because you better not have called me fat, especially since you're one big ugly tub of lard. That's mean, Cracker said. You can kiss these dogs goodbye. I don't serve dogs to fat, mean old trash.
Lula leaned over the counter to get into his face.
Fine by me on account of I don't want your nasty dogs, but I don't put up with no one disrespecting me. Oh, yeah? Well, kiss my behind.
And Cracker mooned her. Lula grabbed the mustard dispenser and blasted Cracker in the ass with a double shot of mustard. Cracker scooped up a handful of chili and threw it at Lula. And after that, it was hard to tell who was throwing what. Hot dogs, buns, coleslaw, pickles, ketchup, relish, sauerkraut were flying through the air. Lula was batting them away with her purse, and I was trying to pull her through the door.
Let go, Lula said to me. I'm not done with him.
Cracker dropped below the counter and popped up with a shotgun.
Now I'm done, Lula said.
We bolted through the door, jumped into the escort, and I laid down rubber getting away from the curb. I drove one block and turned off Stark.
You have to dial back on the fat thing, I said to Lula. You can't go around shooting people because they say you're fat.
I only shot one guy. The second was only mustard.
Lula swiped at some chili stuck to her shirt.
We didn't get lunch. Where you want to go for lunch?
I'm going home for lunch so I can take a shower and change my clothes. I feel like I've been rolled around in Giovicini's dumpster. Lula powered her window down.
One of us smells like sauerkraut. I think it's you. You look like you got hit with a whole bowl of it. It's stuck in your hair.
Don't for a moment think this is Bella's work, I told myself. The pimple and the sauerkraut are coincidence. The eye is a bunch of baloney. Repeat after me. The eye is a bunch of baloney. Chapter 14. By the time I left my apartment, it was mid-afternoon. My hair was clean and smelled only faintly of sauerkraut. I was in my usual uniform of jeans and t-shirt, and my plan was to stop at Giovicini's and get a sandwich for lunch and a piece of lasagna to save for dinner. I passed Mooner's bus on my way to the store. The bus looked normal enough, no indication of a bear inside. The ME's truck was missing from the curb. Morelli and some uniforms were standing in the middle of the lot watching the backhoe work. I took all this to mean the body had been removed and the grave was getting filled in and graded. I parked and joined Morelli. Was it the lawyer?
Probably, but we couldn't make a positive ID.
No recognizable jewelry?
An expensive watch, no wedding band, no wallet.
Morelli leaned closer.
You smell like sauerkraut.
Does it make me undesirable?
No, it makes me hungry for a hot dog.
Do you think this is the last of the bodies buried here?
The CSI guys worked their way through the entire lot and found only this one.
Why do you suppose the two bodies had different burial spots?
They were probably buried at different times. We're guessing he used the backhoe that was here doing debris removal, and he dug wherever the backhoe was parked.
Still no tie-in to the bail bonds office?
Morelli shook his head.
No, but I'm going over some correspondence and financial records with Terry tonight. Something might turn up.
Terry again. Mental head slap. Morelli grinned down at me.
You're such a cupcake.
Now what?
Every time I mention Terry, your eyes cross.
He wrapped an arm around me and kissed me just above my ear.
Good thing I like sauerkraut, he said.
I bypassed Mooner's bus completely and went directly to Giovicini's. I ordered a turkey club and was in the middle of a critical dinner decision when Grandma Mazur called.
We're making lasagna tonight, she said. It's a special recipe, and we're having chocolate cake for dessert. Your mother wanted to know if you wanted some.
I stared at the slab of lasagna in Giovicini's deli case and found it lacking. Sure, I said. Set a plate for me. I carted my turkey club to the coffee shop and sat in the window area with Lula and Connie. They found another body on the bonds office property, I said. Morelli thinks it might be Bobby Lucarelli, Dugan's lawyer.
I knew he was missing, Connie said. He was Vinny's lawyer, too. Vinny was using him for some real estate transactions.
My phone buzzed with a text message from Dave. I have a surprise for you. He probably meant well, but I had enough surprises in my life. I was sitting with my back to the window, and I felt a shadow pass over me. I turned to see what had caused the shadow, and I caught Bella standing outside looking in. She put her finger to her eye and nodded and smiled at me.
Holy Mother, Connie whispered.
Lula made a go-away gesture at Bella.
Shoo!
Bella glared at Lula, turned, and walked down the street.
Do you feel any different? Connie asked me. Did you just get a hemorrhoid? Are you breaking out in hives?
I don't believe in the eye, I told her.
That's good, Lula said. You keep telling yourself that. You're gonna be fine. You don't think she took offense that I shooed her, do you? Maybe I shouldn't have done that. I already got a vampire hickey. I don't need no more weird juju shit.
Connie looked at her cell phone.
Vinny just texted me that the bear's hungry. Someone has to make a chicken nugget run.
I guess I could do that, Lula said, but I don't get the whole bear thing.
Connie gave Lula a wad of cash.
It was a high bond, and apparently the bear's worth a lot of money. He's part of some Russian circus act booked into Vegas. I guess the owner got a little drunk and shot a bartender because he wouldn't serve him. Anyway, Vinny took the bear because the case is scheduled to go to court on Friday. Fast cash turnaround.
So how many buckets of nuggets does the bear want? Lula asked.
Get him 4 extra big buckets, Connie said. No coleslaw, but he might like biscuits.
I went with Lula because I didn't have anything better to do, and I wanted to snitch a biscuit. Lula cruised down Hamilton, pulled into the Cluck in a Bucket lot, and parked.
I'm not getting all this at the drive-thru, Lula said. They always short you chicken at the drive-thru, and they don't give you the fresh, hot biscuits. They give you the nasty-ass old ones.
I got out of the Firebird. I looked through the big plate glass window of Cluck in a Bucket, and I saw Merlin Brown standing in line waiting for his order.
Do you see what I see? Lula asked. I see Merlin Brown getting 2 bags of chicken. He's probably got a gun and wants to get even with me. And even if he doesn't have a gun, look at him. He's huge, and most likely he don't have a stiffy no more. And he could run fast and grab me and rip my toes off. And I just got a pedicure, too.
We need a plan.
Yeah, too bad we don't have a big net. We could catch him if we had a big net. Except for the big net, I don't have any ideas.
Merlin pushed through the door, and I could see his foot was totally wrapped in a massive white bandage, and he was limping.
Let's get him, I said to Lula.
What? How?
We'll tackle him. We have the element of surprise. We'll take him down to the ground, and I'll cuff him.
Seems mean, what with his toe being shot off and all. Maybe we want to wait for him to be feeling better, like April.
I gave Lula a shove.
Now!
Lula and I ran at Merlin, and Lula was waving her arms and yelling,
"Gah!"
Merlin saw us coming and froze. He had a bag of chicken in each hand and a look of total disbelief on his face. Lula went low, hitting him at the knees. I ran at him flat out and put my shoulder into his chest. And Merlin didn't move. It was like hitting a brick wall. Merlin shook us off and opened the door to his car.
Crazy ass bitches,
he said, and he drove away. Lula picked herself up off the ground.
That was humiliating.
What was all that arm-waving and yelling?
I was trying to scare him. They do that in the movies when the angry horde of marauders is storming the castle.
We went inside, bought our chicken and biscuits, and returned to the Firebird. I ate a biscuit, and Lula ate a couple pieces of chicken, and we drove back to Mooner's bus. You go on in and deliver the chicken, I said to Lula. I'll wait here in the car.
Don't you want to say hello to Bruce?
No.
As far as bears go, he's a pretty nice bear.
I'll take your word for it. Lula took the chicken buckets and bags of biscuits into the bus. There was a loud growl and a shriek, and Lula jumped out of the bus and hustled back behind the wheel of the Firebird. Is everyone okay in there? I asked her.
Bruce was hungry and forgot his manners.
Chapter 15. Lula and Connie cleared out of the coffee shop a little before 5, and I motored off to my parents' house. I parked, let myself in, and stood for a moment in the small foyer, enjoying the smell of chocolate cake fresh out of the oven. I should learn how to make chocolate cake, I thought. I should go out and buy cake pans and a box mix. How hard could it be? And then my apartment would smell wonderful. And it would be fun to make a cake. And maybe I can't commit to Morelli because I can't cook. Okay, that was a stretch, but I hadn't been able to come up with anything better. My father was asleep in front of the television. I could hear my grandmother and my mother in the kitchen, and I heard a male voice mixed into their conversation.
I like buttercream frosting, he said.
I'd been suckered in again. It was Dave Brewer. Grandma stuck her head out the kitchen door.
I thought I heard you come in. Look who we got here. It's Dave, and he's cooking with us. He's real good at it, too.
Surprise, Dave said.
He was wearing a white 3-button collared knit shirt and jeans, and he had a red chef's apron wrapped around him.
Just in time, Grandma said. We're icing the cake.
This isn't a surprise, I thought. This is an ambush. I took a moment to calm myself and make an attitude adjustment. A couple minutes ago, I was thinking I wanted to bake a cake. So, here was my opportunity. The cake was cooling on a wire rack, and Dave was in the middle of making frosting. I looked into the frosting bowl. Chocolate.
Not just chocolate, Dave said. This is my special fudge mocha icing. It goes on like icing, but then it sets up like fudge.
He brought sausage from Frankie the Butcher, and he made his own red sauce for the lasagna, Grandma said. And he got good Italian cheese to grate up. Too bad you didn't get here sooner. We just put the lasagna in the oven.
Gee, sorry I missed all that, I said, trying to sound cheery, not feeling cheery at all. Not only wasn't I happy to have Dave foisted on me, I didn't like him taking over my mom's kitchen. I didn't like him making his own red sauce, grating his good Italian cheese. That was stuff my mom was supposed to do. It was her freaking kitchen. Although truth is, she looked content to have someone make a meal for her. Dave dribbled coffee into his icing, liked the consistency, and spread it on the layers. He made it look easy, but I'd tried it in the past, and it hadn't turned out glorious for me. He swiped a glob of icing up with his finger and held it out to me.
Want a taste?
Okay. I know he was captain of the football team and he could bake a cake. That didn't mean I was ready to suck his finger. I was picky about what I put in my mouth. I'll wait, I told him. Wouldn't want to spoil my appetite. I wandered into the dining room and set the table. I laid out plates, knives, forks, spoons, napkins, glasses. I fidgeted with each one and checked my watch. I was stalling. I rolled my eyes. This is ridiculous, I thought. I was a big, tough bounty hunter. I faced off with vampires and guys with stiffies. Surely I could manage another evening with Dave Brewer. And if I didn't already have 2 men in my life, I probably would be happy for the fix-up. Probably. I marched myself back into the kitchen. Now what? I asked. My mother was at the sink, washing dishes, happily drinking booze from a water glass. My grandmother was slicing tomatoes.
Dave's making his original salad dressing, my grandmother said.
It's not really original dressing, Dave said. It's oil and vinegar, but I brought some olive oil infused with herbs and some 25-year-old balsamic vinegar.
You're gonna make some woman real happy, Grandma said to Dave.
She cut her eyes to me. Some woman who can't cook.
I could cook if I wanted to, I said.
Dave broke the seal on the vinegar.
I have some recipes that take almost no time.
He looked over at me.
I'll print them out and bring them over to your apartment.
I appreciate the offer, but I don't have time to do much cooking right now. And I don't especially want you in my apartment, I thought. He seemed like a perfectly okay guy, but I wasn't interested, and I suspected he wanted to do more than cook.
Margaret Yeager called and said she saw the ME's meat wagon back at the lot where the bonds office used to sit, Grandma said.
I poured myself a glass of red wine and left the bottle on the counter. They found another body.
Grandma sucked in air. It's gotta have something to do with the bonds office. Maybe Vinny's burying people as a side job.
Maybe it was just an easy place to dump a body, Dave said.
It's not real private, Grandma said. There's always someone driving down Hamilton Avenue.
Dave shook his head.
Not in the middle of the night.
Yeah, but you could go to the landfill and there's never anyone there.
They installed security cameras at the landfill,
Dave said.
And besides, you have to drive the body to the landfill, and then you get DNA traces in the trunk of your car. I guess you could steal a car.
I see you've thought this through, I said to Dave. Dave helped himself to the wine.
My cousin got a ticket for dumping toxic waste. They caught him on video, and everything I know about DNA I learned from CSI. I've been watching a lot of television since I moved home.
An hour later, I pushed back from the table and took a deep breath. The lasagna had been way too good, and I'd eaten way too much, and I almost had an orgasm eating the cake. My jeans were uncomfortably tight. My thoughts were conflicted. Possibly it was the 3 glasses of wine I'd chugged, but I was thinking it wouldn't be so bad to have a husband who loved to cook. Heck, I could even get involved. I could do the chopping, and he could throw it all into a wok, or whatever. And I could buy some candlesticks, and we could have a dinner party. I plugged Ranger into the picture, and I could see him as an expert chef because Ranger is good at everything. I couldn't see him at the dinner party. 2 people is a party for Ranger. Morelli would be good at the dinner party, but he'd burn all the food if a ball game was on. Dave was a perfect fit in the kitchen and at the dinner party, but I wasn't especially attracted to him. He felt bland compared to Ranger and Morelli. I was asleep on the couch when Morelli slipped his arm around me, and Bob gave me a lick on the cheek with his giant tongue.
Who? What?
I said, disoriented on waking. Morelli clicked through channels on the television.
You must have had a hard day. It's only 9 o'clock.
I ate too much at dinner. Lasagna and chocolate cake at my parents' house. It's going to take me days to digest it.
I looked down at my jeans. The top snap was open, and there was no hope of closing it.
I brought a piece of cake home for you. It's in the kitchen.
He kissed me on the top of my head, went to the kitchen, and returned with his cake. He forked some into his mouth and nodded approval.
This is really good.
It's the icing.
Yeah, it's like fudge.
Dave Brewer made it. Turns out he likes to cook.
I'm missing something. How did you get Dave Brewer to make you a cake?
My mom met Dave's mom in Giovaccini's, and they decided I should be his girlfriend. So I've gotten sucked into 2 dinners with him, one of which he made.
And?
And what? Morelli ate the last piece.
Are you going to be his girlfriend?
No. He makes great cake, but I'm sticking with you.
Just checking. Nice to know I don't have to beat the crap out of him.
You can't smack him around anyway. We're supposed to have an open relationship, right? Were you and Dave friends in high school?
He was a year younger than me and a world away. I was a screw-up with a bad reputation, and he was the football hero. He was dating Julie Barkalowski, the pom-pom queen.
How about you? Did you ever date Julie Barkalowski?
I dated every girl in that school. I was a horn dog back then.
And now? Morelli put his plate down and wrapped his arms around me.
And now I'm your horn dog.
Lucky me. He clicked the television off, slipped his hands under my t-shirt, and kissed me. Minutes later, we were in bed, we were naked, and Morelli was doing a demo for me on the various ways I was lucky. He found the way I was most lucky,
and just as I was moments away from scoring a home run, a vision of Dave Brewer in an apron popped into my head and broke my concentration. "Damn," I said through clenched teeth. Morelli picked his head up and looked at me.
"Is there an issue?"
"I lost it."
"No problemo. I'll start over. I have to work off the chocolate cake anyway."
Chapter 16. The next morning, I dragged myself into the coffee shop and ordered a grande with extra caffeine. Connie and Lula were already hard at work, settled into the window seating area. Lula was doing the day's jumble, and Connie was tweeting on her laptop. Lula stared up at me.
"You look like you've been run over by a truck."
I eased myself down to the couch. Long night. I couldn't get Dave Brewer out of my head. It was like he was haunting me.
"You're just all clogged up with men," Lula said. "You got confused hormones."
"I don't feel confused. Mostly I feel tired."
"Hope you're not too tired," Connie said. "Ziggy violated his bond last night and you need to bring him in."
"What did he do?"
"He attacked Myra Milner at bingo. He said he just wanted to get cozy, but he had his teeth in and he gave her a couple punctures. I guess he has a thing for the ladies. Anyway, she pressed charges. He was long gone by the time the police got to the bingo hall."
"Myra Milner is 82 years old," I said to Connie. "What the heck was he thinking?" Connie gave me the right to apprehend papers.
"Probably he was thinking she was easy. Myra told the police the batteries conked out on her hearing aid and she didn't hear him sneaking up on her."
"I don't like this," Lula said. "I had a close call last time and I still don't know if I'm out of the woods here. I had a real craving for a Bloody Mary and a rare hamburger last night."
"There's no blood in a Bloody Mary," I told her.
"Yeah, but it's the idea."
Mooner's bus pulled up at the curb, and Mooner and Vinny got out and came into the coffee shop.
"We got a problem," Vinny said. "Genius here was walking Bruce, and Bruce wandered away."
"He looked like he had to poop," Mooner said, "but he was having a problem, like finding the right spot, and I thought maybe he needed privacy. I mean, not everyone can poop with an audience, right? So I turned my back for a minute, and then when I looked around, he was gone."
We all went dead still, absorbing the fact that a large bear was loose in the berg.
"We've been riding around, but we can't find him," Vinny said. "You need to help us look."
A man sitting at a table in the other window area leaned toward us.
"I couldn't help overhearing. I saw a bear walking down Hamilton when I was on my way here. I thought I was seeing things. A white Camry pulled alongside the bear, the driver whistled, and the bear got into the back seat. And then the car drove away."
"Describe the driver," Vinny said.
"He was in the car, so I couldn't see all of him, but he was Caucasian with brown hair that was kind of long, middle-aged. I think he had sort of a thin face. And when he talked to the bear, it wasn't in English. I think it might have been Russian."
"Boris," Vinny said. "That's Boris Bellman, the idiot who owns the bear."
Connie typed Bellman into her computer and came up with his temporary address in Trenton and his cell phone number. Vinny called the cell phone.
"I want my bear back," Vinny said to Boris.
Even from where I was sitting, I could hear Boris yelling at Vinny. How Vinny let his prize bear loose to walk around on a busy street. How now he was going to Vegas with Bruce, and Vinny could go screw himself. And then Boris hung up and wouldn't answer his phone again.
"Don't look at me," Lula said. "I'm not going to get the bear. He growled at me when all I was doing was bringing him chicken. And on top of that, he has bad breath."
I capped my coffee and stood. "Give me the address. I'll talk to Bellman."
"I'm not going," Lula said. "This job gets worse and worse. Vampires and bears and big guys with boners. Okay, so maybe I didn't mind the big guy with the boner so much."
Connie wrote Bellman's address on a note card and handed it to me.
"If you want the whole file, I have to go into the bus to print it."
"Not necessary. This is all I need."
"And when you're done tracking down my bear, you're gonna need to figure out who's dumping bodies in my lot," Vinny said. "Business was bad before, and now it's non-existent. It's like we got death cooties."
"Morelli's on the case," I told him.
"Well, tell him to work faster. I'm dying here. We're going under. Another week of this, and Harry's gonna pull his money, and we'll all be up Schitt's Creek."
Bellman was staying in an inexpensive motel south of town on the way to Bordentown.
I pulled into the lot and parked next to a white Camry that shouted rental car and had bear slobber on the side window. The structure was classic 1970 two-story pink stucco and white trim. Bellman was in Unit 14A. I knocked on the door, and a trim 40-something man who fit Bellman's description answered. A few feet behind him, I could see Bruce sitting on the edge of the bed.
"Where's the pizza?"
Bellman asked, giving me the once-over. "Excuse me?"
"Aren't you the pizza delivery lady? I ordered pizzas."
"Sorry, I work for Vincent Plum Bail Bonds."
"Vinny's a bad man,"
Bellman said. He stepped to the side and made a swooping motion to the bear.
"Kill!"
Bruce lunged off the bed and rushed at me, mouth open.
"Growl."
I jumped back and slammed the door shut. "Geez, Louise," I said to Bellman through the door. "I just want to talk to you."
"About what?"
"Do I have to yell through the door?"
"Yes."
I blew out a sigh and counted to five. "I know you're anxious to get to Vegas, but you need to show up for your court date. If you don't show up, you'll be considered a felon, and it will be one more charge against you. If you show up and explain what happened, you might get off light since it's your first offense."
"I don't think it was my fault," he said. "I don't even remember it happened so fast."
"The bartender said you were drunk."
"I had a couple drinks. Maybe I was drunk."
"Promise me you'll show up for court."
"All right, I promise. But if I go to jail, you have to take care of Bruce."
"I can't take care of Bruce. They don't allow bears in my apartment building."
"I can't just abandon him," Bellman said.
"I'll figure something out. And just out of morbid curiosity, would he have killed me?"
"No, Bruce is a pussycat. He was just playing with you."
"Yeah, right. I've never bought off a judge before, but in this case, I'd do whatever it took." Chapter 17. I was relieved to see Mooner's bus was no longer in front of the coffee shop. I didn't want to face Vinny and explain to him that the bear was staying with Boris. Vinny would have a differing opinion. Vinny would go on a rant and send me back to get the bear. This would be a disaster because not only didn't I have a clue how to wrestle the bear away from his owner, I also wasn't sure Vinny and Mooner were good bear parents. I was worried they'd feed Mooner's homemade brownies to Bruce and he'd hallucinate he was a hummingbird or something. Aside from the missing bus, nothing much had changed since I left. Lula and Connie were still camped out in the window.
"Hey, girlfriend," Lula said. "How'd it go with the bear?"
"It went okay. I talked to Boris and he promised to show up for his court date."
"Yeah, but what about the bear? Where's the bear?"
"The bear's with Boris. I made an executive decision to leave him there." The door to the coffee shop opened and Bella marched in.
"You,"
she said, pointing her finger at me, eyes narrowed.
"I know what you do with my grandson. You take advantage. He don't stay at the birthday party like a good boy. He come to you for a nicky-nacky. You a slut. I fix you so he see. I give you Vardo."
She waved her hand at me, she slapped her ass, and she wheeled around and left the coffee shop.
"She scares the crap out of me," Lula said. "And you're in big trouble. You did nicky-nacky, and now you got the Vardo."
I looked at Connie. "What's Vardo?"
"Beats me," Connie said. "I never heard of Vardo."
"It has to be some Italian voodoo thing," Lula said. "Like, if you were a guy, it would make your dick fall off."
I hiked my bag up onto my shoulder. "I don't want to think about it. I'm going to see if I can find Ziggy." Lula set a grocery bag on the table.
"I'll go with you. I went to Giovicini's while you were gone, and I got stuff for us."
"Stuff?" She pulled a couple ropes of garlic out of the bag and gave one to me.
"All we gotta do is wear this and we won't get no love bites from vampires."
I appreciate the thought, but I don't think Ziggy is a vampire.
"Yeah, but you don't know for sure, right?"
"I'm pretty sure."
"Pretty sure don't cut it,"
Lula said, wrapping the garlic around her neck.
"I already got one foot in the land of the living dead and I'm not taking no chances."
I drove the short distance from the coffee shop to Ziggy's house and parked. We got out, rang the doorbell, and waited. No answer. I left Lula at the front door, and I walked to the rear. I knocked. Nothing. I felt for the key. No key. I snooped around trying to see in the windows, but no luck there. I returned to Lula in the front of the house, and Ziggy's neighbor stepped out with her dog.
"Are you looking for Ziggy?" she asked. "Because he isn't home. I saw him leave in the middle of the night. I was up with heartburn that would kill a cow, and I saw Ziggy go out with a suitcase, and his car is still gone. I can't ever remember Ziggy going anywhere before. He was a real homebody."
She squinted at Lula.
"Is that garlic?"
"Yes," I said. "Lula's making marinara tonight. She's getting into the mood early." I called Connie and told her about Ziggy. "Do you have anything on him?" I asked. "Any idea where he might have gone?"
"I'll run a family history."
I meandered through the burg looking for Ziggy's black Chrysler. After 40 minutes, I gave up and returned to the coffee shop.
"Whoa," Lula said to Connie. "What happened to you?"
Connie's hair was like the wild woman of Borneo. Her lipstick was smeared, and she had crazy eyes.
"What?" Connie asked. "What do you mean?"
"You look like you stuck your finger in an electric socket and took a bunch of volts."
"It's the coffee. I sit here all day drinking coffee. I've got an eye twitch, I'm having heart palpitations, and I can't unclench my ass muscles. I need a different office."
"Now that the bear's gone, you could move back into the bus," I told her.
"Not the bus," Connie said. "I can't go back to the bus. All that black fur and mooner smell."
"It's not going to smell like mooner," Lula said. "It's going to smell like bear."
Connie looked around the coffee shop.
"It's not so bad here. I could try switching to decaf."
I gathered Connie's files and stuffed them into her tote bag.
"You could work from home." "I've got my mother with me," Connie said. "She's staying while she recovers from her hip operation. I love my mother, but I'll slit my throat if I have to spend more than 20 minutes with her." She hums. "Do you know what it's like to live with someone who hums all day?"
"I guess it depends if she's a good hummer," Lula said.
A muscle worked in Connie's jaw, and her right eye twitched.
"There are no good hummers. It's all hum, 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 hum. That's it. Fucking all fucking day fucking long. Hum."
"Excuse me," Lula said. "I didn't know there was an issue. Maybe you need a pill or something."
I unplugged the laptop. "You can use my apartment. It's quiet, and it has everything but food." I got Connie settled in at my dining room table, and Lula and I took off to find Merlin Brown. I pulled into the lot to his apartment building, and we immediately spotted his car.
"I guess it's a good thing we found him home," Lula said. "So why does it feel like a bad thing?"
"Because we don't have any idea how to capture him?"
"Yeah, that could be it."
I've seen Ranger make captures. 80% of all felons immediately surrender at seeing Ranger on their doorstep. He's not a man you'd want to take lightly. The remaining 20% are instantly taken down and cuffed. He makes it look easy. Sad to say, I'm not nearly Ranger. My successes are the result of luck and dogged perseverance, and the dogged perseverance has more to do with desperation to make an overdue rent payment than an innate strength. Still, I usually get the job done, and I'm a better bounty hunter than I was last year. I parked beside a broken-down van on the opposite side of the lot from Merlin's black SUV. "He knows us now," I said, "and he's not going to let us into his apartment. Let's sit and wait for a while and see if he goes out for lunch."
"Then what?"
"Then we figure it out."
"This is going to be boring," Lula said. "Good thing I got a movie on my phone, and I got music, and I could check the weather. I could even surf the internet, and maybe I could find Bobby Flay making a burger. I'm into cooking."
"I didn't think you had a kitchen."
"Well, yeah, but I'm into watching cooking."
We sat for 40 minutes, and at high noon, the door to the building opened, and Merlin limped out.
"I got an idea," Lula said. "We could run him over with the car."
"No."
"Boy, you're a real party pooper. You got a better idea?"
"He's going out for lunch. I say we follow him and wait for a good place to take him down."
"We aren't going to run at him and tackle him again, are we?"
"That wouldn't be my first choice." Merlin drove down Stark, turned toward the government buildings, and after a block pulled into a 7-Eleven parking lot. He cut his engine, left his car, and carefully walked inside, keeping his weight off his bandaged foot. I parked one space away, got out, and arranged my equipment. Cuffs tucked into the back of my jeans, pepper spray in my sweatshirt pocket, right to apprehend papers in my jeans pocket, stun gun in hand. Cover the door, I told Lula, and for heaven's sake, don't shoot him again. It was lunchtime, and the store was filled with government workers loading up on nachos, hot dogs, candy, junky drinks, and cigarettes. Merlin was in line for nachos. I sidled up to him, and the man standing behind Merlin elbowed me aside.
Back of the line, lady, he said.
Merlin looked over his shoulder at me, and recognition registered. I reached out to stun gun him, he batted my arm away, and the stun gun flew off into space. I had pepper spray, but I couldn't use it in a store filled with bureaucrats. By the time I retrieved my stun gun, Merlin had already knocked Lula on her ass and was in his car spinning his tires, leaving the lot. I was holding a lot of anger, and it was directed at the idiot who elbowed me aside. I casually sidled up to him and accidentally stun gunned him. He went down to the floor, wet his pants, and I felt much better.
This is getting real old, Lula said, back on her feet. On the bright side, we're at 7-Eleven, and I can get nachos for lunch.
Lula and I ate our nachos in my car and washed them down with Slurpees.
This isn't such a bad job, Lula said. We get a lot of personal freedom. We could eat lunch wherever and whenever we want. And we meet a lot of interesting people, vampires and such. I don't especially want them sucking on me, but aside from that, it's pretty good. And I already got some mileage out of seeing Merlin Brown naked.
I scooped up the last of my nacho cheese, and a small sigh inadvertently escaped.
You, on the other hand, don't look so happy, Lula said.
I feel like my life isn't going anywhere.
And?
I did another sigh. Lula drained her Slurpee.
Why do you gotta be going somewhere? Seems like it should be enough that we had nachos, and we got meaningful jobs. We catch bad guys. If it wasn't for us, there'd be vampires and all kinds of shit running around loose.
Actually, the vampire is still at large.
Yeah, but we're thinking about catching him.
And what about my relationships?
Here we are back to the relationships, Lula said. I knew it was gonna come to this. Your whole problem is you turned yourself into a glasses-half-empty person. You got two hot men on the line, and you look at it like a bad thing. But I see it like hitting the jackpot. You probably could even have three hot men if you put an effort into Dave what's-his-name.
I looked down at my jeans. I still couldn't button them. And on top of everything else, I'm getting fat, I said.
That's not your fault. You had the hex put on you. Bella gave you the boils and all. And now you got the Vordo.
I put my phone to my ear and called Connie. Have you had a chance to find out about Vordo? No, she said, but I'll ask around. Not that I believe in it, I said to Lula, hanging up.
Sure, Lula said. I don't believe in it either, whatever the heck it is. Still, I'm glad I don't got it.
I put the escort into gear and drove Lula to the coffee shop so she could get her Firebird.
What are you going to do now? She asked.
I guess I'll go home. Okay, I guess I was feeling a little defeated. And I guess I was sort of embarrassed about stun-gunning the guy in line. But if we're going to be brutally honest here, I was just glad I wasn't the one to wet their pants. Chapter 18. I pulled into the lot to my apartment building and realized Mooner's bus was parked there. When I offered the use of my apartment to Connie, I hadn't anticipated Vinny and Mooner hanging out there. I took the elevator to the second floor, walked down the hall, and even before I inserted my key, I caught the smell of pot. I kicked the door open and stormed into my apartment. Connie was sitting at the dining room table, working at the computer. Vinny was slouched on the couch, watching television. Mooner was slouched next to Vinny. Who's been smoking pot in here? I yelled. There is no smoking in my apartment, especially pot. This is a total drug-free zone. I wouldn't let anyone smoke in here, Connie said. I made them go out to smoke.
Yeah, Mooner said. We like had to smoke in the hall.
I felt my eyebrows go up into my hairline. You were smoking pot in the hall? Are you insane? That is so rude. It's illegal. It's unhealthy. It's smelly. It's irresponsible. It's unacceptable. I was halfway through my rant when my attention was diverted to the television screen. Two huge-breasted naked women were trying to have sex with a monkey and a little man dressed up like a hobbit. What the heck are you watching? That's not pay-per-view, is it?
It's like great that you've got cable, Mooner said. You can't get quality film like this on network. Okay, so it might cost dinero, but dude, you've got Hobbit movies. That is so, like, rare.
The Hobbit had his business hanging out, and it was hard to tell if he was interested in the women or the monkey. I didn't especially care about the Hobbit's sexual orientation. What I cared about was that this was going on my bill. Not only was I going to have to pay for this, but it was going to be public record that I bought Hobbit porn. Someone in the cable company billing department would know. I wrestled the remote away from Vinny, clicked the television off, and pointed stiff-armed at the door.
Out! I have to meet with the contractor anyway, Vinny said, pushing up from the couch. They're taking the crime scene tape down tonight, and we can get back to work on the office tomorrow.
He stopped at the door.
Where's my bear?
I dropped a peanut into Rex's cage. I'm working on it. Rex rushed out of his soup can den, stuffed the peanut into his cheek, and rushed back into his soup can. Mooner held the door open for Vinny.
Dude, we could get satellite television for the moon bus.
Yeah, and we could rob a bank to pay for it, Vinny said.
No, I yelled into the hall after them. Don't say that to Mooner. He'll do it.
At least somebody will be bringing in money, Vinny said.
I closed and locked the door and looked in on Connie in the dining room. You don't think they'll rob a bank, do you? Connie shrugged.
Anything's possible, but Vinny would be more inclined to hijack a truck.
Anything new come in?
No, it's deadly slow.
I took a nap, and when I woke, it was a little after 5, and Connie was packing up to leave.
See you tomorrow, she said. Do you have anything fun planned for tonight?
I'm helping Ranger with a new account.
Good thinking to take a nap.
It's business. Connie hiked her tote bag onto her shoulder.
I've seen him look at you. It's like your lunch.
I grabbed my sweatshirt and my shoulder bag and walked with Connie to the parking lot. Rangeman was located on a quiet side street in the center of the city. I took Hamilton and did a quick detour into Morelli's neighborhood. His SUV was in front of his house, so I pulled in behind it and parked. Morelli inherited the house from his aunt and has since become surprisingly domesticated. There's still some wild beast left in the man, and he doesn't own a cookie jar, but he's better than I am at stocking his refrigerator, and from time to time he puts a seat down on the toilet. He was pouring Bob's dinner kibble into a bowl when I walked into the kitchen. Bob did his happy dance when he saw me, whipped around and dove for his food when Morelli set the bowl on the floor.
What's up?
Morelli asked. I just stopped in to say hello. I'm on my way to Range Man. Ranger asked me to go over a security system.
After hours?
It's never after hours at Range Man. Range Man ran a very specialized high-end security service, and unlike most large security firms, they monitored their accounts locally from a monitoring station in the Range Man building. The building ran 24/7, and many of the men rented small efficiency apartments on site. Anything new on the bonds office bodies? I asked Morelli. Bob had scarfed up all his food and was pushing his bowl around on the floor. Morelli grabbed the bowl and put it in the sink.
Nothing earth-shattering. Positive IDs on both of them. Dugan and his lawyer, Bobby Lucarelli. No surprise there. Put into the ground a week to a couple days apart.
Dugan and Lucarelli were involved in something bad.
That's a given, Morelli said. The question is, which bad activity got them killed? Dugan had a laundry list of bad activities.
I was having a hard time concentrating on Dugan's activities because I was thinking Morelli looked unusually hot. He was in jeans and sweat socks and a t-shirt that wasn't tucked in, and he was developing a nice 5 o'clock shadow. I mentally undressed him, my eyes lingering over critical areas, my body heat notching up a couple degrees. Morelli grinned over at me.
Cupcake, that is such a dirty smile.
I dropped my gaze to his feet. It's the socks. Very sexy.
I'll leave them on next time. The way my schedule is looking, that'll be next month. These bonds office murders are attracting attention. I have to be at a press conference tonight at 7. After the press conference, I have a meeting with the mayor.
Wow, the mayor.
I'm one of many attending, and I'm not one of the more important. I'm cannon fodder, someone to throw under the bus if it becomes necessary.
Nice.
Yeah, at least Terry Gilman will be there.
This time, I'm gonna get a better seat.
I punched him in the chest, kissed him, and left. Chapter 19. Rangeman has underground parking for private and fleet vehicles, all of which are black and immaculate. All are equipped with GPS tracking. Ranger has personal space at the back of the garage, directly in front of the elevator. His cars are also black and immaculate. He has four spaces, and he currently has three vehicles, a Porsche 911 Turbo, a tricked-out Ford F-150, and a Porsche Cayenne. I parked my filthy, dented Escort in the fourth spot. I entered the elevator, waved hello to the hidden camera, and went to the fifth floor. Every part of Rangeman is monitored, with the exception of the restrooms off the lobby on the ground floor, employees' private apartments, and Ranger's apartment on the seventh floor. The fifth floor is Rangeman Command Central. The monitoring station is here, plus Ranger's office. The elevator door opened on 5, and Ranger stepped in and pressed the 7 button.
"The plans are upstairs," he said. "I thought we could go over them while we ate. I'm sure Ella left enough for 2.
Ella and her husband manage the Rangeman building, and Ella personally manages Ranger. She keeps his apartment pristine, ensures that his clothes are perfect, delivers 2 gourmet meals a day, and attempts to humanize a space that without her would be sterile. Ranger isn't a man who sets up family photos on the coffee table. The elevator opened to a small marble-floored vestibule with 1 door. Ranger fobbed the door open, and I stepped into his apartment. It had been professionally decorated with little help from Ranger, but it felt right for him. It was calm without being enervating, and it was masculine but not overbearing. The furniture was contemporary and comfortable with clean lines. The color palette was all earth tones. Upholstered pieces were cream with chocolate accents. Wood was dark and glossy. Lighting was subdued. The front door opened to a short hall with nondescript art on one side and a cherry sideboard on the other. Ella kept fresh flowers on the sideboard alongside a silver tray with the day's mail and a second tray for keys. Ranger dropped his keys into the key tray, leafed through his mail, and returned it to the mail tray unopened. For as many times as I've been in his apartment, I've never once caught him looking at the art. I suspect he didn't know it was there. The hall led to an open floor plan living room and dining room with a small but state-of-the-art kitchen to the right. Appliances were stainless steel, counters were black granite, dishes were white, stemware was crystal. Ranger lived well, not by his choice, but by Ella's. She'd left a large spinach salad on the counter, a bread basket in the warming drawer, and a casserole in the oven. I set the bread and casserole on the counter next to the salad, and Ranger opened a bottle of Pinot Noir. We fixed plates and took our dinner to the dining room table. I buttered a dinner roll. "Tell me about the security system."
"Large house, 12,000 square feet, wealthy, politically ambitious client with a young second wife, 2 teenage daughters and 1 teenage son by the first marriage. He wants maximum security. The teenagers want no security. Not sure what the wife wants."
"So security can't be intrusive?"
"It can't be intrusive, but more than that, it shouldn't be in places a woman would find objectionable."
"Like a camera in the bathroom?" Ranger nodded.
"I have photographs and preliminary floor plans. You can take a look at them later."
"If you employed a woman, you wouldn't need to bring me in like this."
"If I could find a woman with the right qualifications, I'd hire her. In the meantime, you're it."
"Have you asked Ella to help with this?"
"Yes. She thought my client made bad choices on kitchen appliances, and she changed the carpet color in the master bedroom."
The photos were stacked at the end of the table. I finished eating and shuffled through them. I got to the bedroom photos and grimaced. "Ella's right about the rug in the bedroom." Ranger cleared the plates and spread the blueprint out on the table. He stood behind me, leaning over my shoulder, pointing out security cameras.
"Every exterior door is under surveillance. Plus, there are roof-mounted cameras scanning the yard and driveway. The windows are impact glass, but they maintain security only if they're closed and properly locked. With 3 teenagers in a house that size, it's likely there will be security breaches. My client would like more interior cameras, but I'm worried I'll be catching his daughters sneaking down to the kitchen for a midnight snack in their underwear."
That's very sensitive of you.
Sensitivity doesn't have much to do with it. It's a lawsuit waiting to happen if one of those kids thinks their right to privacy has been violated. I don't want my technicians accused of spying on a 13-year-old.
Does the video feed into your monitoring station?
No. It records for a set amount of time and recycles, but a technician could have access to it on a service call. The client can also have select locations available to him for monitoring.
I was trying to concentrate on the security system, but I was already a little buzzed from the wine. Ranger was close, and I wanted him even closer. He was warm, and he smelled faintly of something unbelievably appealing.
Babe.
His face was inches from mine.
Are you listening?
Yes.
No.
My relationship with Ranger is well-defined. We both acknowledge the desire existing between us. Ranger's made it clear he'll take advantage of any opening given, and I've struggled to keep my openings closed. My position has more to do with self-preservation than my allegiance to Morelli. Morelli chose to back off on commitment, and I agreed. Maybe someday that will change, but for now we have a comfortable working arrangement. My arrangement with Ranger isn't nearly so comfortable. It's frustrating at best and borderline scary at its worst. Ranger lives by his own code of conduct. He's an honorable guy, just not by normal standards.
What did I just say?
He asked, and the corners of his mouth almost smiled. I leaned into him a little. I love the way you smell. It's sweet and citrusy and clean and very sexy. My lips accidentally skimmed across his ear when I spoke, and I think I might have sighed a little. He lifted me out of my chair, pulled me into him, and kissed me. His lips were soft on my mouth. His hands were firm on my back. His tongue touched mine, and heat swirled through me and went straight to my doodah. Ranger is good at just about everything, but Ranger is outstanding at making love. He knows when to go slow, when to be gentle, when to stop being gentle, and best of all, Ranger instinctively knows when he's on target. His hands slid under my shirt and moved to my breasts. He was hard against me, his mouth at my ear, his breath warm on my neck. He stripped my shirt off, and then my bra. His mouth returned to mine. The kisses were hotter and deeper. And then my jeans were gone, tugged over my hips and discarded. We moved from the dining room to the bedroom, both of us naked. His hands were everywhere on me. His mouth followed his hands. I had a whisper of a thought that this might not be a good idea, but the thought was immediately banished, pushed out of my brain by the knowledge that I was about to experience the mother of all orgasms. When we were done, he rolled me on top of him and wrapped the quilt around us. I drifted into sleep and was awakened by my cell phone ringing far off in the dining room.
Let it go,
Ranger said, his lips grazing across my temple. I glanced at his bedside clock. It was almost 9. It could be important.
Such as?
My grandmother could have had a heart attack, or my apartment could have caught fire.
Babe, none of those things are going to happen.
You don't know that for sure. My apartment catches fire a lot. The phone rang a second time, and I wriggled out of his arms, picked his t-shirt off the floor, dropped it over my head, and went to the dining room to get my phone. The message was from Connie, telling me to call her back. I touched the redial and looked down at Ranger's shirt. It still smelled like him, and it was triggering little stabs of desire that mingled awkwardly with globs of guilt. Morelli and I had a no-commitment agreement, but that didn't stop me from feeling guilty.
I found out about Vordo, Connie said. My Aunt Pauline came to visit my mother, and she knew all about it. It's one of those old country curses. It's supposed to make you horny. If you've got a vendetta going against your neighbor, you put Vordo on her daughter, and she turns into a slut. You might want to lock yourself up in your apartment until the Vordo wears off, or you could be tackling guys on the street, and you want to stay away from Ranger.
Too late for that.
Oh, my God, where are you?
Range man.
I want details. I want to know everything.
I couldn't possibly do it justice, I told Connie. There are no words to describe where I've just been. I disconnected and went back to the bedroom. The lights were low, and Ranger was naked and lounging on the bed, waiting for me to return. I did a slow scan of his perfect body. "It's not my fault," I said. "It's the Vordo." Chapter 20. Ranger's bedside phone rang at 7:30 the next morning. We were in a tangle of sweaty bed linens waiting for our blood pressure to drop below stroke level, having moments before dispatched some high-quality passion. He reached across me, answered the phone, and listened for a beat. He disconnected and stood.
"That was Tank. Someone dumped another body on Vinny's lot. Didn't bother to bury it this time."
"Do you have an ID?"
"Not yet. It just came across a police band. I'm going to take a fast shower and go downstairs. After the second body was found, I had cameras installed on the adjacent building. So with any luck, we've got a picture of the killer. Tank sent a tech out to get the images."
Tank is Ranger's second in command. He's the guy who watches Ranger's back, and he needs no further description because his name says it all. I sat up in bed. "Would it be okay if I take a look too?"
"Sure, come down when you're ready."
I showered and dressed in my clothes from the previous day. I pulled my hair into a ponytail, took the stairs to the fifth floor, and stopped in at the small kitchen and dining area where Ella set out a full breakfast every morning. Hot cereal, cold cereal, fruit, healthy muffins and bagels, an egg dish, and a meat dish. I poured myself a cup of coffee, added cream, grabbed a Morning Glory muffin, and made my way to Ranger's office. I'm sure everyone in the building knew I'd spent the night, but no one snickered or whispered. Anything other than a friendly smile, and they would have to answer to Ranger. And no one wanted to tangle with Ranger.